This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guests today are Stephanie Chase and Hillary Ostlund, Executive Director and Library Manager, respectively, at the Hillsboro Public Library in Oregon. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from listeners just like you. Go to circulatingideas.com/support to find out how you can help support the show. Reader's Advisory is a core service of libraries, and you want to have your staff trained by the very best. Back in 2007, librarian Becky Spratford was working at a public library and teaching the Reader's Advisory course at Dominican University, but wanted to do more to compile her best ideas and save the very best of her students' work, so she started a blog, RA for All. That's at raforall.blogspot.com, and that's as a way to showcase and catalog all that work. And now the blog is one of the most trusted and respected RA tools available. And after 15 years of public service, Becky transitioned into being a full-time consultant in 2015 and provides RA training to library workers all over the world. And now she can help you. If you're interested in hiring Becky to present at your library staff day, your state library conference, or wherever library workers are learning, either in person or virtually, go to raforall.blogspot.com and preview some of her past programs, her current schedule events, and listen to her talk about RA service, and you can also obtain basic pricing information. Click the RA for All logo at the top of the blog to find her contact information, and if you mention Circulating Ideas, she will give you 10% off if you book by the end of 2019. Thanks to Becky for sponsoring this episode of Circulating Ideas. So again, go to raforall.blogspot.com and book Becky by the end of 2019, and you will get 10% off if you mention Circulating Ideas. Stephanie, Hillary, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having us.
I've wanted to have you guys on for a long time, especially Stephanie, who I followed on Twitter forever.
Oh, so sweet.
But then we met in person at ALA, and I went to a couple of your sessions, and I want to talk about the stuff you talked about there. But first, I want to hear about your backgrounds and how you came to work at Hillsboro in the first place.
Sure. You want to start, Stephanie?
I guess. So I've been in libraries for about 20 years. I started out on the East Coast. I worked at the New York Public Library and was a library director in various towns in Vermont, small rural towns, also for about a decade. And then when my husband and I both realized at the same time, we actually didn't really like winter, and we were living in northern Vermont where you have snow 6 months of the year, we decided to move to the West Coast. I started out at Multnomah. I did various jobs at Multnomah County Library, worked up at Seattle Public Library. And then when this job came open in Hillsboro, it was really what I had hoped and what had turned out to be true is this really wonderful kind of combination of what I loved about being in a smaller library in terms of where, you know, staff know you, you know staff, people have to wear multiple hats, you get really creative, really deep connections with the community. Everybody is responsible for doing that. But that also what I really loved about the big systems I worked at, in that you have a lot of resource, so you're able to do things. Mm. So we're really fortunate in Hillsboro to be in a community that loves the library, uses the library extremely heavily, and also supports the library with a really good budget. You know, so it's this really wonderful kind of combination of, you know, still being kind of small and scrappy, but also having the ability to access resource to do what we want to do.
Yeah, and I've been at Hillsboro for 12 years. I went to school out in Massachusetts. I went to Simmons College, so shout out to anybody who's at Simmons. And I was in Western Mass, and I worked in Northampton, Massachusetts. That's where I started really in, like, libraries, I guess, in my, like, professional side of my career. But I did start in libraries when I was 16 as my high school intern with Mrs. Alstott, who I'm still friends with today. And that kind of just, I mean, in college I worked in libraries. I've just always loved people and being there for people, and it's just kind of led to a great career. I've been lucky to stay in Hillsboro for as long as I have. I moved back to Oregon, I think it was 2006. I'm originally from Washington State, so the Northwest was always where I thought I would land. But Hillsboro is really special. Since Stephanie's been there, I've had, I think, 4 different jobs, which is great. So like it changes a lot, you know, your roles and responsibilities. So it keeps it interesting and it doesn't feel stagnant, which I think is really all I seek in kind of, you know, my career and staying like up on things. I don't want to be doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So we've been mm-hmm. able to cultivate that in our workplace without needing to always be looking for something new and exciting yeah. elsewhere. We're creating it internally, which is great for morale and I think retention.
So eloquent, Hillary.
Yeah, I think it's really important to keep that energy going in your workplace and keeping it dynamic so that people have a room to grow where they are, so they don't feel like they have to go somewhere else and just plateau where they are and go somewhere else to find that energy that they're missing in their current workplace.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about it a lot because I'm asked frequently, like, when are you going to do something else? Or, you know, when are you going to go somewhere else? And it's sort of like, well, I really like it here, so I don't know, you know. And I think because I've had different chances, it's felt like something else a lot, which is what not everybody wants in libraries. But I do think, you know, it's the career trajectory is really important mm-hmm. to think about, and creating pathways mm-hmm. Is something that I am really passionate about, and luckily get to do in my new role. We call it Cultivate at the library, in like hiring and staff development. So that's been a really good fit. Thank you, Stephanie.
Can you tell me a little bit about the community that you serve?
Sure.
Yeah.
So Hillsborough is about 100,000 residents. It's in Washington County, which is the county that is just west of Multnomah County, where Portland is located. Washington County, I believe, is the most diverse county in the yep. state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And Hillsborough is the most diverse large city in the state of Oregon. So we're at almost 40% non-white, about 25% Latino. And we have a really interesting mix in Hillsborough because it's also really the epicenter of the so-called Silicon Forest. So we have a lot of high tech in Hillsborough. So Intel has its largest R&D facility in Hillsborough. So we have the opportunity to serve a community that is diverse across so many dimensions of diversity. So not just ethnic, but also socioeconomic, education, all of that. And so, and it's one of the few full service cities in Washington County. So in that the city is providing all of the services. So mm-hmm. Parks is a city department. The library is a city department. Fire, police, in a lot of Oregon and in a lot of the rest of Washington County, some of those services are provided by, you know, cross municipality districts. And a lot of Washington County is actually unincorporated, so there's no municipal body to collect taxes or mm-hmm. to provide service. So Hillsborough is also really unique in that it's seeking to provide all of those services to its community locally.
Yeah, that mix of like urban and rural and agricultural is really an amazing blend in Hillsborough and makes the fabric so interesting for thinking about service. And we're not Portland. Mm-hmm. So just being very clear, we're not Portland.
Yes.
Do you guys find that providing services for a diverse community opens up a lot of new opportunities for you all?
We do. You know, we just completed our most recent strategic plan. And we had worked really hard to diversify our library board kind of separately from that. And so then having this really diverse group of people help talk about the role that the library should play in the community has really allowed us to do some different things. And so one of the things that came out of our strategic plan was just a very clear mandate from the board to focus on outreach, and more specifically to focus on outreach, not in a traditional way where it's about driving people into the library, but really about providing service, you know, not just at the point of need, but at a point of interest. So how do we really just engage with the community where they're at, and more importantly, with what it is that they want to do? You know, so we have a van, the Library on the Loose, and we take that around, and we've done some outreach, you know, for a long time. So we have migrant camps in Hillsborough in the summer. We've provided service, usually in partnership with the county, to those camps for some time. And we've always been partners with the summer lunch sites, but have really made a commitment to really support the summer lunch sites that don't have other kind of activity engagement. And then we do a lot of stuff with our parks, where we just kind of do drop-in pop-up programming. And And what happens there is really just driven by who's in attendance. And so what it might look, you know, what might happen one week might be even different from what might happen the next week. And we're just always really looking for the public, I think, to really tell us what it is that they're interested in doing. So for us, it's not about, you know, here's this thing we want to make sure that you know about or that you can do. It's, I think, a lot more open and collaborative. And Hillary wrote down a quote that I said about how it's, you know, this is, you know, we're just looking for all of, like, all of that gets added in to, I said, the soup of the service we provide. You know, I think I've never really thought about it before, but I think a lot of the way that we're really engaging with the community is almost, it's like stone soup, right? Like, totally. It's like everybody's just bringing their mm-hmm. ingredients, so we make something really cool. Mm-hmm. And the next time it's something really different. You know, so I think if people were really looking for something that was like, you know, program in a box and replicable, mm-hmm. they'd probably be frustrated. But if you're just looking for kind of joy and something that celebrates, again, I think the real diverse perspectives in a community, which also differ, right, from time to time, I think that's how we're really looking, you know, to engage our services. We really strive, I think, to have a structure that allows for that kind of freedom and that kind of exploration and that kind of engagement.
Well, and I would add, I think the hardest part in this has been just answering the questions from this new library board who are really interested in like measuring impact and outcomes and getting away from like traditional ways of marking statistical success. And mm-hmm. so we've had really great conversations, like a lot of libraries doing this impact work and thinking about how can staff actually measure the joy that Stephanie's talking about, because it's a little harder to measure joy and feelings
right.
than it is to measure gate count and circulation numbers and questions answered and all those traditional metrics we use in libraries. So, you know, we can definitely say that we are busier in different ways confidently, but we're looking at all these different ways of analyzing, I think, like stories and, mm-hmm. you know, pictures and photos that are used. And like, if, you know, just yesterday we had so many great stories shared. We use Slack in the workplace and we mm-hmm. have a great channel we named Word on the Floor. And it's just a way to share like what you're doing that's joyous, basically. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing the photos coming in from the outreach visits.
Yeah.
And there might be just 6, 10, 15 people there, but they're all super engaged and active. And then the stories they get with little smiley faces yeah. on the surveys, you know, yeah. we're just trying to find different ways to show that that diversifying our services is working, mm-hmm. but that's still kind of an ongoing conversation.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing that? We'll talk kind of use this kind of as a way to transition into talking about some of the big changes you guys have done over the last few years, but are you seeing that diversity getting into your staff as well? I mean, are the people that you're hiring, are you using that as a tool you're trying to reflect your community?
Absolutely. I think it's the most imperative thing, honestly, we and others should be doing. Mm-hmm. It's hard because it means really breaking out of the mold of often job descriptions that mm-hmm. have been barriers and held a lot of people back, including mm-hmm. hiring managers. So you have to take that time on the front end to really work with your HR department. And if anyone from my HR department is listening in Hillsborough, I mean, I'm so grateful to have people who are willing to be creative and let us think outside the box with what we're saying in our job ads, videos we've made sometimes for recruitment, mm-hmm. and just trying to get out the word in other places than just traditional like library siloed listservs for jobs that are open. Because people have to even find those jobs or see themselves in them to mm-hmm. apply. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have a process that like allows them in. Mm-hmm. And last summer we had a recruitment for library assistant. That's what we call our general sort of entry level customer service position. And really intentionally went out all over the place with this job ad. And we had yeah. our biggest recruitment. It was almost 750 people applied. We had one full-time position and several part-time that we were hiring for. And we really did screen like all of them. Mm-hmm. And we made, I mean, mm-hmm. it took a long time, but it was so worth it. In the end, we hired a total of 13, somewhere in our on-call pool, our substitute pool, but everybody speaks a different language other than English, mostly Spanish, because that's our main target language, but also Vietnamese. And we've added services like a Vietnamese story time we didn't have before because mm-hmm. of this staffer. Mm-hmm. And most of them are bicultural mm-hmm. and, are really happy to share that with the community. So none of them had library experience mm-hmm. except for a couple. And that was interesting because they had customer service experience, mm-hmm. which we prioritized and were teaching that library stuff on the back end. But as anyone in libraries know, what we do is complicated. So it takes a lot of time, more time to train them up on everything, but they have the right attitude mm-hmm. and that they want to serve and they want to be there for people. And that's what we're prioritizing. But mm-hmm. it does take a different lens for hiring and honestly, just more time and effort from the hiring team.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good way to approach this is that I know you've talked before about all the changes that you've done, which we'll talk about in a little more detail in a second, but it came from not thinking about it from a staff perspective, but from a community perspective of what does the community need from the library and make mm-hmm. the library into that. Not whereas so many traditional things are, well, I'm a reference person, so this is what this mm-hmm. job does, and I'm a circulation person. So that it's mm-hmm. you know, break it all apart, put it back together in a way that better serves the community.
Right. We've done such a good job in libraries of like defining our services over the years. People know those terms. And I just think it's so interesting to be working so deliberately to just unpack it for what the community wants. And so when we reorganized, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about this with you, but that's where we really started was how would the community describe our services? Right. And it certainly wouldn't be reference, circulation, or right. other words right. that we use to sort of define basically help.
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite stories that came out of last summer's hiring that I mentioned was one of our library assistants, Kati. She had a friend who works at a neighboring library, and her friend was like, I'm so glad you got that job. Are you working in circulation or reference? And Kati had been with us, I think, about 2 weeks at that time, and she's like, I have no idea. And she told us that at like our little meet and greet. And I was like, that's such a beautiful story because she told her friend, she's like, I'll let you know, but I'm just learning like how to help people, I guess. I guess I'll learn more. But it was just interesting that they'd been hired at almost the same time, but two uh-huh. different neighboring uh-huh. libraries, but just that subtle difference in how we're serving up philosophy. Anyway.
I think that she had gone back and said, I don't get to help just one.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you do. Yeah. I get to help everybody.
Yeah.
So where did all these big changes that you've done, which again we'll talk about in detail in just a second, I keep teasing it, but where did it all come from? Was this something, Stephanie, that you saw when you first came into the role that you really wanted to reshape things, or like what was the kind of the impetus for starting these changes?
I mean, I guess I've been fortunate or unfortunate, I don't know, to be repeatedly hired specifically to be a change agent, and so when I was, you know, going through the process in Hillsborough, it was made really clear to me, like both through the way that the process was set up and kind of in the kind of very direct language that the city manager was using at the time, but also just the vibe from the staff that people were ready to do something new. You know, when there was not anything broken about Hillsborough, like yeah. Hillsborough was great when I got there. You know, and again, in the Pacific Northwest, I think we're really fortunate to be very heavily used. You know, so it wasn't about kind of, you know, rescuing anything. But it was made really clear to me by the city manager who hired me, one, that he expected the library to be more integrated in the city, which we've already talked about. And two, that he wanted things to be different. But he had zero direction about what that was. So it's like, well, what's your end goal for the library? Like, what am I striving for? And he said, I want the library to be the best library in the universe. And we're like, great. What does that look like? And he's like, I don't know. That's why I hired you.
Bless him.
Allow me to delegate it to you.
Yes. And so, you know, I think that it really just started very organically. I mean, I feel I was really fortunate to be put in that situation where like my interest and my willingness to, you know, lead change and break things open and support staff through that were really well aligned with a staff that was interested in exploring some new things too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say Hillsborough was very hierarchical when I got there.
Yes.
And that is like, so not me at all. And I think that that's where we really started. And some of it, again, I think like a lot of things in libraries, it was really driven by finance, you know, and by budget. You know, again, we're very well supported, but when I got there, the number of desks that we had and the number of staff that we had on those desks, I had to prep my first budget within a couple of months of starting. And I just said, like, we literally cannot afford to provide this service. Like, we literally can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we really started out of necessity, but that in a lot of people are in that position, but I think it was just the perspective that we used to answer that question. So rather than thinking about that as like a loss or a challenge, it was really an opportunity Hillary and I think we didn't know about this book at the time, but there's this book called Beautiful Constraint by Mark Barden and Adam Morgan. And they just talk about you create a propelling question for yourself where you take a significant constraint and you pair it with a bold ambition. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that idea that, and the whole book is about really the idea that constraints can really spark, you know, intense creativity if you are really viewing it from a position of abundance. Mm-hmm. So when we were really just like, well, this is what we've got a lot of resource, but like, what can we do differently about it? And so I think that perspective, and then we involved staff from the get-go. You know, I think a lot of what we've done has been driven by staff. We might have been doing the timeline, right? Or we might have been prompting, but a lot of the direction we've gone has come out of staff interest or, you know, from staff prompting. Mm-hmm. And so once we got started, I think it was just like, I like to work like Hillary does too. I've moved around a lot, but I think like that idea of just like having something fresh, like, you know, nothing's ever done.
Right.
And like really changing staff perspective about change. Like this is not like a thing that gets done. it's something that is evolving and it's iterative and you have to keep doing it. And I think we just continually gave staff and continue to give staff the message that when you work for a rapidly growing, very diverse community, like your services literally cannot stay the same.
Right.
They have to be adjusting and they have to be changing. And so what does that look like? And how do we take a lot of little pivot points? I think we're at the point now where we've done some big turns, right? And that a lot of what we do now are about making it's just pivoting in the moment, like little micro changes that just keep things going all the time.
Well, and just to speak a little bit to Stephanie's, ambition and success as a change agent. I mean, like I said earlier, I had been there when she started. I'd been there for a total of 12 years in multiple jobs, on call, librarian, you know, supervisor, branch manager. Like I got all these different opportunities, but, and there was opportunity to be creative, but it was only within your like group of 10, like in your department, quote unquote department. And just like upon meeting her, it was so clear that everything was an opportunity. And I think that slight shift, even for me, like that always made sense in my brain, but it wasn't like, and I'll just be honest, it's not usually how librarians tend to think. Mm-hmm. I think usually you're surrounded by, oh, well, we can't do this. And if the budget news was delivered, it's delivered in a, well, we're getting budget cuts or you can't afford to keep this many people at the desk. What are you going to do about it? Stephanie's always framed it in this, like, well, how are we going to do it? How can we do it? So, I mean, design thinking principles, mm-hmm. without even using fancy terms and design thinking at all, are just how you operate. And that unlocked, for me personally, just massive creativity. And it's just been fun. Every time we have meetings, every time we have discussions, whether it's with our leadership team of managers or down to our supervisory teams or with all staff, there has to be a tone of positivity. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't come from any place of, well, this change is coming from the city and this is right. What we're going to have to do. It's like, what an opportunity the city's given us to revision our services and mm-hmm. think about our rapidly mm-hmm. changing community. We use more post-it notes and white sheets and flip charts and you know, than probably
Mr.
Sketch Markers. And I mean, really maybe than any other organization, I swear, but it's, and you know, I love seeing our boards, our whiteboards fill up in the hallway with ideas from people. And so changing that script, it's hard to pinpoint, but it's maybe one of the hardest things I think we've done, because again, you're dealing with a profession of tenured people who usually love what they do, but they like what they do because they tend to bunker down and be perfectionists. And what we're asking them to do is to not be perfectionists right. and to be adaptable and nimble. And honestly, I give credit all the time. I think about this with our staff. We have had such a resilient mm-hmm. bunch of people. Mm-hmm. There have been some hard conversations for sure, mm-hmm. but people have really thought and dug deep to keep with us and to stay with us and to be on this ride.
Yeah.
So I'm insanely proud of what we've done, but it's definitely hard work. But to change that tone from mm-hmm. well, we're going to have to do this because so-and-so said to how are we going to get to do this is where I would encourage people, anyone thinking about mm-hmm. this massive shift to start. And that mm-hmm. beautiful constraint book really unlocked a lot mm-hmm. of potential for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great that you're so open and collaborative about it. I mean, I think that's an important part of it, is being open and transparent as much as you can, and so people understand how processes were set up, how decisions were made. Even if you don't agree with it, this is why we made the decision. This is the decision we made. Sometimes you just have to accept it and move on. We will listen to you, obviously, and to your input, but and we will take it into advisement, and maybe it will affect things, how things go. But even if you disagree with something, here's how we came to that. So you're not just getting this order from on high of now we're doing this.
And I think a lot of our really foundational documents are from staff.
Yeah, definitely.
So that they, you know, we have a set of quality service standards. So, you know, again, as this process has been really iterative, we've really looked at, like, how do we help staff at every level really feel empowered? You know, so we started with, we had sent Hillary and another staff person to the Disney Institute to learn about their quality service standards.
I highly recommend that to people.
And it's a great idea of just, you know, and it's not like a hierarchy, it's a flow. So when you're helping, you know, and serving your customer, you know, what's this flow that you go through, like where you're making sure these things happen, and what are the blocks, right? Mm-hmm. So where do you stop? You know, and a great example that I love from the Disney Institute is, you know, safety is their number one. And the guy who was driving, it was like the safari thing, I guess, at one of the parks. And you're supposed to sit in the car and keep your arms in the car. But this guy kept standing up and like leaning out to take photos. And the driver, I think, very nicely, repeatedly reminded him. And then, you know, I think finally the driver's just like, if you don't sit down and keep your eyes in the car, like, we all have to turn around and go back. Yep. Some people be afraid, like, that's not good service. Like, the customer's not right in that. But like, safety is number one. And that guy was putting everybody else really at risk with his behavior. So like, you have to stop there. So, I mean, we go back to that document a lot, and then we have a set of great expectations that we're really kind of, you know, for multiple levels within the organization. So like, I have a set of expectations, the managers, the supervisors, and all staff, and they build upon each other. And staff were really, fundamental in creating those expectations and sharing with each other about how those expectations are lived. Mm-hmm. So we're going back with a lot of things to just like almost basically like, do you remember when you said this was important? And a lot of staff also just know, they know that that's where we're coming from.
Well, and I think those documents help too for the staff to feel supported by, again, like the said supervisor and leadership team, so that if they're making a decision, because the goal is that you are still making that person you're helping as happy as possible. You know, it's not Disneyland all the time, but we want you to give people a great experience. But sometimes you are going to have to be firm, and we understand that. So if you've made that call or you want to waive more fines, we want to empower you to make that decision based on all these expectations we've set forth. And if you go back and ask for help or guidance from a supervisor, that they're not going to just go out and do it for you.
Right.
They will. Well, what do you want to do? What would be fair for you in this situation, and to help get them there? And that does take time and training, because, again, it's kind of a retuning of a lot of traditional library staff's brains.
So I know it's still, you're still kind of in process with all of this. And I mean, it's a constant retweaking of things and seeing what works and things like that. And you talked about breaking down the hierarchy. Can you talk about what your new organizational structure looks like?
It's so funny. We don't actually have really like an org chart. People keep asking us for one. Maybe we'll get there someday. But I think we were working on something else, I think, and we were prompted by a library super fan. And she said, what if your org chart looked like how people actually use the library instead of being for you? You know, what if you actually had an org chart that reflected the public, right, as opposed to your internal processes? And it was just such a light bulb moment for us, right? Because like, even with all of this work we had done, we had reorganized once already by then, you know, and we're just like, oh, like, it is still really about resource allocation for us. And it's really about, you know, structures for us. This doesn't reflect how people use the library. And I think I'll see if I can find the picture, Steve, so that you can include it if you can, but she asked us to go through this process where you had to make 5 different org charts, and you couldn't use anything like from the previous drawing, I think, like each time it had to be different. So it was really funny. Going through multiple times is really important, because certainly like the first few were really still very traditional looking when I look at them now. But I finally ended up with one where I was just like, what do people want to do when they come to the library? And it's like, they want to like do stuff. They want to learn stuff, right? They want to like talk to people. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but it was like really basic. I think I had four things on the chart. And it just really created such a conversation because mm-hmm. we're like, people do not care about circulation or reference or like who processes the books or who puts them on the shelf or any of that stuff. They care that what they want to do with the library, they can do.
And that anyone they choose to approach or however they choose to use the library service models, whether it's self-service or talking to someone or engaging virtually, I mean, that they're going to just get someone who can do that or find out that everybody knows how to tell you about an event rather than going to like one set service point who can look up that said calendar with the event that wasn't for everybody. So we've just been really deliberate about unpacking as much as possible to, you know, train our staff to just really help people at the point of need.
And I think what we're really thinking about, well, what does the structure look like to support that? We had gone on an inspiration trip to Zappos. So we've done this multiple times when we get to the end of the fiscal year, if we have a little bit of money left, it's amazing how inexpensively you can often get a group of people somewhere. And so we went to see Zappos in particular because of their structure. So they're really well known. I mean, they're very well known for their customer service, which is part of why we wanted to go. But they're also really well known for their use of Holacracy, which is a form of self-management. And so as we were sitting there listening to how they kind of organize staff and empower staff in order to provide great customer service, I think most of us were like, well, we kind of do this. This is kind of like what we do in libraries, you know, because we, like Zappos, right? You have no idea what somebody is going to ask you about. And so we started looking a little bit more into Holacracy, and it was definitely, there's a real structure and like a real philosophy behind it that was too heavyweight for us. But what was really inspirational was, I think, one of the foundational concepts is that you separate the organization of the people from the organization of the work. Mm-hmm. And some of what we had found, again, like we're in this county where staff move around a lot. We had staff who would get promoted, staff who would change, you know, responsibilities. So on one hand, we were really feeling like staff were getting new supervisors kind of too often. We wanted to have more stability there. Mm-hmm. And so that concept of organizing the people separately from the work just really appealed. So in our structure, like in Holacracy, your supervisor stays consistent. And that's true no matter what you're working on. And your supervisor is responsible for all of those things, you know, your timesheets and your time off requests and all of that stuff. But your supervisor is really dedicated to your personal, professional development. So your supervisor, like Hillary likes to say, is like your homeroom teacher.
Yeah, like your homeroom.
It's like where you go back to touch base. And that's consistent. And then the work, you may then have 10 different people who are, you know, your quote-unquote supervisor for work that you're doing, depending on the work that you're doing.
And that can be peers or, you know, librarians who aren't technically supervisors.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that I think is, that's how we're really structuring things. And when we did a lot of work to try to match staff with supervisor based on kind of communication styles and strengths, it's time to probably do that again.
Yeah, it is.
But then what we emphasize to all of the staff is that you work for the library. So you don't work for a department or you don't work for an area, you work for the library. And so on the other side, right, really about the structure that we have to organize the work, we have a system we call the quadrant system. I think we're getting ready to kind of like, by the time this podcast comes out, it will be changed. because we're at a point, we're talking about making some changes now. But that, you know, each, at when we developed this, each quadrant had a manager, because there were four managers. Mm-hmm. And we really talked about making sure those quadrants were expressions of kind of what we wanted people to feel and be able to do with the library. So they're connect, which, I mean, feels really obvious, right? We want people to connect with each other, with their community, with resource. Explore, because we really want people to, like, learn new things and engage in creativity. Mm-hmm. Innovate, where we want people to try new things and be able to have a way to do new things. And cultivate, because we really want people to grow. And those reflect internally, too, so that we have an emphasis on process improvement and innovation work. Hillary's quadrant, where it was really focusing on, again, that personal professional development and then recruitment and hiring and staff culture. And so each manager has a set of supervisors that reports to them. And those supervisors are really kind of like the subject experts or the leaders in an area.
Yeah.
And they're the only staff who are assigned to a quadrant because everybody else, again, works for the library. And so a great example we have is one of our library assistants is actually retiring.
Oh, yeah, on Wednesday.
She, when I got to the library, worked in technical services, and she was great, super efficient. She had to put all the labels on our AV.
Yep.
And so she always had a lot of ideas and she had a lot of questions. So in an earlier reorg, when we created staff-led teams, so that were teams that were led by staff, they had a management sponsor, but the management sponsor was only there to essentially provide resource or do a resource check-in. It wasn't about leading the group. So one of our first groups was the innovation team. And so the staff member, Lynn, was on the innovation team. And she just got really excited about things. And as we started to reorganize, she admitted that she really wanted to do some public service time,
yep.
Right? And so then she eventually, when we still had traditional departments, she switched out of technical services to public services so she could have public service time. But she still knew, was the only person who knew how to do some things. So she was still doing some technical services work. But then as time went on, she wanted to learn how to do story time. So she started doing story times. And she just like kept adding, right, skills and interests. And she, I think, is one of the great examples of someone who works for the library. She does public service time. She helps with the materials, get materials out on the shelves. She does story time. She does programming. She was an active participant in a staff-led team, you know, just all of this stuff. And so for most staff, I think sometimes if you're looking for your place, like in a chart, it's like a big circle that's like the library.
Yeah.
And everybody's just in it, but I think it's been really rewarding because we're so committed to connecting staff interests and staff strengths, right, with the feedback that we're getting from the public.
And that's really, I think, like just the only thing I would really add, and that was an awesome, amazing recap, Stephanie.
Thanks.
Thank you. I feel like is that the staff strengths is what this has really been about. And even in the beginning, we maybe didn't have the language or the tools mm-hmm. to even define it. And mm-hmm. it's actually moved more quickly than maybe even we thought it would because mm-hmm. the staff just really respond well to this. I mean, they like being able to be on different project
yes.
teams, and we call it work circles for some of the things that have to happen all the time, like cataloging and interlibrary loan. So before it would be like one or two people really did those things. And, you know, I like to just also add and share that we had people who came to us to say, this is so freeing for me because I never could go on vacation. I could never
right.
leave because I
yep.
was the only one person that did this. So anytime you can build resiliency into tasks mm-hmm. and daily work, or anything that people are doing, it's better for the organization, but also for the health of your employees. That was just sort of a side note tip that I learned. And I think, again, that strengths piece can't be touted enough. When mm-hmm. when you ask people what they really like doing, and if you can tap that into your strategic plan and organizational need, I mean, good things are bound to happen.
Yeah.
But it does take that time to step back and invest in people at the individual level mm-hmm. and I think matching them to the best supervisor you can. It's not always perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll be mm-hmm. perfectly honest with you. If you have other questions anytime, let us know. I mean, like it's definitely hard because it takes a different type of performance management. And the supervisors have been really great at trying to kind of learn this new style of supervision too, because
yeah.
they are not the expert at every task anymore. They used to supervise one work area,
right.
and now they're supervising a group of people who may have a style that works best for them, matched to the supervisor. And so they have to be okay with like, you know what, I don't actually know what goes on in the cataloging work circle.
Right.
Let's check in with the person who does, and that's okay.
Right.
It's okay to not know. It's okay to not be perfect. And again, that's a shift in a lot of, I think, tenured library staff's
mm-hmm.
Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of overlapping Venn diagrams, kind of.
Yes, it is like Venn diagrams galore.
Yeah.
So I think both of the sessions that you guys did at ALA and I attend, or I don't know if you did more than two, but I went to two of them,
mm-hmm.
and they were both packed, and
yeah.
people
yeah.
were, and I got there a little bit late for the second one. I had to sit on the floor, which was challenging because I was trying to like live tweet and stuff. It was a little difficult. One of the reasons people were drawn to particularly one of them was that you talked about the deskless model. And I think that's kind of my library has done that. And I know we get a lot of questions about it all the time. And that's kind of a trend in libraries now of relooking at that. It's one of those things that's a kind of a hot take kind of thing in the library world, yeah. or going deskless or going Dewey list and all this stuff, like sort of sacred cows kind of that we've gotten rid yeah. of. Can you talk about the challenges of going deskless and then the positives of that, of what led you to do that in the first place?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we've been talking about this in libraries for as long as I've been, you know, in libraries, so 20 years, of how to change your service model. And I mm-hmm. think, like, that's really what it was for us at its core, but we knew that going deskless would grab attention.
Well, but you know? I think it wasn't even our intention, really.
No.
You know, so I think I wrote an article in the, as what, May, June, public libraries. That talks about kind of our whole process, because it's like, where we ended up being deskless was this whole evolution that it wasn't our end goal, you know? So when we were kind of back at that same place, we're like, well, we had reclassified a lot of our staff so everybody could answer, you know, at least basic mm-hmm. questions. We had told all the librarians that we had the expectation to be able to do account work. And we moved to a single service point. And so I think one of the things that's just important to know about Hillsborough is at, you know, we see between 2,500 and 3,000 people a day in our libraries. And our big location, we see, you know, on average about 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of people. And so when we had staff behind the single service point, staff, I think, were really excited to do it.
They were.
But it was the first time, I think, that any of us realized how busy the library was.
Yeah, because we'd created a clog almost inadvertently mm-hmm. by combining service mm-hmm. at one point instead of having it spread out across yep. the floor. Yeah.
So the lines were really intense. And staff hated – the public hated it, of course. But the staff hated it. And so I remember staff just saying, like, how guilty they felt, like, when they would leave, right, to go walk and help somebody with something. And everybody, right, in the line would just be giving them dagger eyes as they walked by. And that also then when they got away from the desk, how hard it was to get back to the desk. And so we had to wait a long time to get the big desk removed from that big, busy location. And, you know, through this whole time, we were kind of talking about, like, how do we get to a smaller footprint? We had done some design thinking work and some prototyping and really had gotten feedback from our users that they wanted more self-service options, like people didn't know they yep. could do it for themselves and they wanted to do it for themselves. So we're just kind of going through all of this kind of stuff. And we were really held back by not being able to remove the desk because of the kind of domino effect of, like, we need a new carpet and this needed to be repaired and all of this. And so we actually had to, staff got really tired of it. So we abandoned the desk actually and moved to this, like, just this little desk that we bought as just a demo.
Yeah. It's like that Demco one you can get.
And we're just like, we just wanted to try something. Mm-hmm. And so staff just really liked being free, I guess. And so by the time the desk got ripped up and we were at a point where we could kind of say, well, what does the new little service point look like? Staff were just like, well, what if we just didn't have one? Like, what if we just didn't have service points? Mm-hmm. And we had been on another one of those kind of exploration trips. We had been to the Anything system just outside of Denver. And we were really inspired by a setup that they have where they have staff perches. So you have a staff client kind of, they're sprinkled throughout the library. And so we did that. We would pair a staff client with a catalog. So you're never too far away from the staff client if you needed it. Mm-hmm. And again, this was a whole process that was really, I think, really driven by staff. You know, staff Definitely. Like didn't want to have this. They didn't want to carry a thing. They didn't want a desk bag. They didn't like the little demo desk. I mean, just all of this stuff. And I wish I could remember who was just like, well, what if we just didn't have one?
Well, I think it came out in a lot of the design thinking. We even did some prototyping with a lot of our volunteers yep. participated and members of the innovation team that Stephanie mentioned. And that was our first, like, we did many different models.
Yeah.
So we tried kind of like the Apple Store model. Would that work? And we got feedback from people who really engage with our services. And really it came down to, like, they want to find you on the floor and they want you to help them. And they like to know that you're going to help them.
Yeah.
And that led to things like the staff coming up with, I think, is the most amazing dress code
yes.
ever. Because it is staff driven and they wanted to wear what they call a service layer. So we have beautiful aprons and we have name badges and buttons that say ask me in English and Spanish, and we have logo t-shirts, and like having that brand has really helped because then yeah. people feel confident on the floor. We still get patrons who are like, but where do I go? And that's understandable because, again, we've trained people who know libraries and have used libraries
over the years to go to a certain desk. So some of that's helping them learn that you can grab any of us now and we'll help you, you know, look for these clues. So we did a lot of marketing around that. We had signage up at that vacant desk that Stephanie mentioned. We took it as an opportunity to be like, here's what you're going to see now as our service model.
Right.
Did everybody love it from the public? No. Are we still handling comments? Sure. But I think like people recognize like, oh, so like you can really, you can help me.
Yeah.
It's okay that you're helping me instead of like looking for that right person. It just takes some time and some re-education again, but for new users. And even my husband the other day came into the library. I forgot to tell you this. He hadn't been in a long time. And he was just like, it's looking like amazing in here. It's so open and like welcoming. And like everybody was so friendly. And I think some of that's just we're walking around.
Right.
We're looking for you. We're not trying to, you know, like bug you.
Right.
But like we're looking just we're making it clear that we're there for you.
Yeah.
And that became the goal more than just even going deskless.
Right.
And it was very staff-driven. It's just been iterative over years.
Yeah.
And my best advice I'd say for people looking to do this in their libraries is it doesn't have to all be planned out perfectly.
Right.
You're never going – by the time you get it planned out perfectly with facilities and everybody involved, you're going to want to change it anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, if you can take those small steps and do some trials and be okay with a temporary desk that isn't, like, the best furniture ever, you know, and just say this is a trial and do a lot of beta – you're going to be better for it and your staff will appreciate it because they can participate and then be nimble.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to have someone too, who is an advocate. I remember with that little, the little demo desk that we ended up using, people kept trying to want to add things to it. And I would just be like, no, 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 you can't add a piece of furniture. No, you can't add the shelf. Because the point wasn't to make it permanent. So I think you also need that.
Yeah.
You need a backbone too. But I think some too is like, as this was going on too, and we were going through that strategic planning process, we also developed a new mission statement. So our mission statement is for everyone, para todos. And so some of what, when we were really looking at what does the desk represent, and we covered this in that going deskless, you know, session, you know, good service, quote unquote, right, looks like a person behind the desk, only to a certain portion of the public, you know, and we just kind of went through like here, you know, and it's service really geared toward our super user. Right. And when you think about the typical library super user, that person doesn't look like actually the majority of the people who are coming into our libraries.
Right.
And so we just really challenge people to think like, what does really good service look like for everyone? Right. And so we are going to have to stop putting all of our resource in this one bucket so that we can also put some more resource in some other buckets. And, you know, so I think we're still trying to figure out, I think, how to capture some of that, that impact. But I think, you know, from our staff, again, you know, that combined with a staff where we have that, as we've talked about earlier, that real dedication to having a staff that is really reflective of our community. I think when we talk to our diverse staff, the feedback that we get is that our diverse public feel a lot more comfortable engaging with staff, you know, because like you can walk up to the person you want to walk up to.
Yep.
And you don't have to wait in line and you don't have to worry about people overhearing your question. And you don't have to worry about who's going to answer that. You know, you don't have to do any of that. You can really choose who you want to talk to. And usually that could be a person. You can engage with that person in your preferred language, all of those things. So I think we also just really challenged people to think like, of course, like your typical life. I mean, I'll put myself there, right? Like as someone like mid-40s, white lady, super reader, used the library for a long time, right? Knows what I want when I come to the desk to ask. Right? Like we're really building service for that person, right? I'm not most people coming into the library. And like, I also could use the library on my own, right? Like the service that I've been able to access for my lifetime has meant I can use the library on my own.
Right.
Most people don't have that opportunity. And like, it will mean you have to serve me, quote unquote, less in order to make sure that other people can have the ability to connect with the library.
Yeah, and every library I know, I mean, you too probably, Steve, is always asking, how do we get to the patrons we're not serving? How do we get to the community that's underserved? And I mean, in order to do that, you've got to take a look at these really important issues. It's not always happening in the traditional ways. And it's hard because it takes that planning time on the back end. What was the analogy, like our friend Matt Finch, who I would encourage all listeners to look up, he does amazing work in facilitation for innovation and like creative thinking, and not just in libraries, but he'll work with libraries. He said that great quote about like, if you don't take the time to put the gas in your car, do you remember? It was something like, you know, like if you get to the point where you're like always on empty and you're, you know, right. Oh, I got to get gas. Right. And that's how I feel like we were operating like before.
Yes.
That's me actually all the time with my gas tank still, sadly. But at work, I feel like more of the like, okay, we don't want to get to that point, but we're going to have to step back. And that means like unpeeling all these layers of traditional barriers, systematic barriers, being honest about what we've been doing as a disservice to people over the years, even in libraries, as much as we care. It's pretty painful.
Yes.
And that for everyone, para todos line has been so powerful with our staff, because it's like, okay, I understand you want to do one more book babies session, you know, this week, but is book babies really the thing we need to spend extra time on? Or would it be better to get out to that park in the van we mentioned and do like a pop-up program? And I think like having them kind of see that change in impact has been so powerful for every staff member.
Yes.
So the last thing that I wanted to talk about, which is a little off of that, is more your outreach kind of stuff. I know I just read something recently. It'll be a few weeks ago now when this episode comes out, but you talked about the tiny branches that you have opening at the parks. Can you talk about that program a little bit and how that helps your community?
It's a great, I love that we're ending with this, because we started out by talking about how collaborative we are in the city and that it's not Parks and Rec the show with us, because I think it was just, was it last summer? Was it only a year ago? I think it was that two members of our Parks and Rec maintenance staff, who Stephanie and I just know, came and said, you know, we're having problems with our tiny branch, or our little free libraries. And we didn't even know they had them in the parks, I don't think.
Right. They had an Eagle Scout project and another kind of like student project that had installed little free libraries in some parks, but that was
right.
It.
And maintenance was like, it's really a problem. Like, people are leaving stuff we don't want in there, and like, we don't know what to do. Like, could the library help? And of course, we're just like,
well, I think they were like, what should we do? And we were like, we could help.
And it led to, you know, I think they were hoping for just, you know, maybe picking up some books occasionally. And we were like, oh no, we're going to go big. And a couple of our staff were really excited to lead the project, and it led to a very cool branding campaign. We now have them in seven parks to start. And we're calling them tiny branches because there's obviously copyright and things to think about when you're doing little free libraries officially, but it's that same concept. And so tiny branches in Hillsborough are now all painted the same color and like have a really welcoming feel to them, and they're in parks. And we took it as an opportunity to really expand our services and provide access and hope that people kind of have some fun in a different way in parks. And it was a great collaboration with our parks department, who were so thrilled that now they can take care of them maintenance wise, but we have volunteers who became tiny branch librarians, and the name tags are so cute.
Yeah, I put one on Twitter.
They're so cute. And it's a family opportunity to volunteer. You can do it by yourself if you'd like to as well, but we had a real call or a real interest from families. So the first tiny branch librarians yesterday who adopted it is a mom with her two sons, and they were there to do the tiny ribbon cutting with the mayor. So it was really special.
It was. You know, and I think there's always, I think whenever we talk about some of this too, like we also have a book vending machine, or you talk about unstaffed library access or any of the things. I think a lot of people in our profession get really worked up about it. You know, and I think, like, of course, a tiny branch in a park is not going to replace a library.
No.
That's not the point. You know, the point for us is just, like, how do we remind people about the library? How do we connect people to the library? How do we, how do we strengthen our collaborative partnerships? How do we find volunteer opportunities for families? Just all of these things. And while at the same time, like, if you're in a gorgeous park, like, maybe you'll pick a book up and read it while you lay on the grass or sit at a picnic table. Or, you know, I think there's a lot about little free libraries, you know, where they take a lot of upkeep, you know, and they tend to then be placed in areas where they're not really serving a literacy need. And, you know, here we're really deliberate about placing them in parks where they're in areas and in neighborhoods in our community that had some literacy need. And then really just pairing it again with somebody who's going to do that work. Like, collection maintenance work is collection maintenance work, right? You know, and our friends in the library are supplying the little free, the tiny branch librarians with their materials, you know, so that there's just always good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not about like replacing going to the library. It's about all this other stuff, right? It's about connecting. It's about, again, joy. Like, oh, like when you find a great book that you were looking for, the opportunity to share things. You know, our mayor brought a book. He was the one, he put the first book in to contribute. He brought a book by a Hillsborough resident who's a Holocaust survivor who had passed away at the end of last year. You know, he got kind of like choked up talking about it. You know, I mean, that's what these programs are about, you know, and I think for me, whenever we can just increase access, right, and increase connection with the library and with books and with reading, that's so important. You know, it's okay. It's also okay, like, if somebody reads books, like, out of a, you know, a tiny branch and doesn't come to the library, like, that's okay. Because really what we're here for, right, is to connect the community and help people connect with reading.
And as anybody knows in libraries, volunteers make such a difference in what we do. And to give them meaningful opportunities like this, I mean, it's just been amazing. We have a waiting list already of 45 people who want to be Tiny Branch librarians because they care about their neighborhood and their community. And I think who better to tap into than those ambassadors who then we can connect with, like, materials and kind of a procedure.
Right.
Because it does take upkeep. But we have that structure. We just need the help and the bodies. And so we found that by just social media call outs. And now we need 45 more.
but I agree. The tiny branches, the unstaffed library hours, the vending machines, things like that. These are supplemental services to what we're already offering. It's not a replacement. And I think, I know, like you said, people get freaked out about it because I think they're looking at how things have worked in Great Britain. It's like, but America is not Great Britain. We're not, it's not the same thing. We're not dealing with the same issues that they are. So that's not what's, I mean, not to say it could never happen here, but that's not what we're doing. And that's not how it's being sold. And that's not how we're pushing it. And I don't think that's, and I think that's, it's a good way to push it like this as, cause you know, libraries are not going to be open until 10 o'clock at night, but if you can have an unstaffed thing, then that's great. And that provides more access for our community.
I think it's also just so important to remember. I mean, again, if you're truly patron centric and you're truly patron driven, you know, we have to recognize that people will help determine what that service looks like.
Right.
And we have to acknowledge that we have a lot of people who live in our communities who do not want to talk to us. And you know what I mean? Like, a librarian is not something for them. Right. And so if we can provide them with a way to connect with a resource where they don't have to deal with something they don't want to deal with, you know, librarians are great, right? Library people are great. Not everybody thinks so. And sometimes with really good reason, right? And sometimes it's time and sometimes it's, you know, lifestyle, whatever. Why are we saying there's only one way to use a library?
So thank you so much for coming on and sharing, especially about your new lack of org structure and all the great things that you're doing for your Hillsborough community.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Steve.
If people want to get back in touch with you to ask follow-up questions, how could they do that?
I think the easiest is, honestly, we're so active on Twitter. Yeah. So I'm at Library Hillary.
And I'm at Acorns and Nuts.
And if you want to link to our ALA presentations too, you're more than welcome. I think you have the links to those slides on the episode.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I'll do that too, so people can click over and look at those and get more detail on both those. Because you did one presentation basically on the deskless model, and the other one was more on, how would you describe it? Like how you transitioned your staff.
Yeah, blowing up the silos of library work.
Yes.
Lots of good stuff for the people who are asking questions of, but how did staff react? Well, that's the presentation for you. So.
Thank you again for having us.
Circulating Ideas is produced by me, Steve Thomas, in the suburbs of Atlanta. Views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of my place of work or the place of work of guests. For past interviews, visit circulatingideas.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. You can help others find the show by leaving a rating or a review. I would very much appreciate it. Thank you. You can follow the show on Twitter at @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening and keep circulating your ideas.
If you have a couple more questions, we're happy to do it. Yeah.
Okay. I've got like 10 more questions, but we're not going to get to all those.